And now, some important words from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation, an engagement of services to be offered, and only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
You know what we need to do is to get the politicians to not talk over our head or try to pull a fast one on us, which we'll get to a little bit later in the show. But because finances and politics are all woven together, here comes a real politician for us, ladies and gentlemen, this infamous Scott Connor.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott
Connor. You love the show, don't you?
I think my reputation is taking a shot. I'm an infamous politician now.
It's fun to have somebody to tease and pick on. And
I mean,
you're good at it.
I can absorb a lot of abuse.
Does your wife listen to the show?
I don't believe so.
Does she know that they are archived?
Not if I can help it.
I'm going to have to make sure we get that information to her so she can tune in and at least pick up some of these fun episodes.
I'm sure she'll enjoy that.
Okay. Well, tell us how much fun the stock market was today.
Tuesday's market was another boring market, David. Another one. Dow Jones down 33 points, S&P down 1.5 points, NASDAQ up slightly, oil flat, gold down a little bit. So really another just boring day. Investors are really waiting on some type of resolution from the Greeks. They're just, you know, they had a proposal today from the private bondholders. What's going on is the private bondholders, the people who own Greek bonds, are negotiating with the powers that be, the lords of the manor in Europe, and they're basically saying, how much are we willing to take in bond repayment? And the private bondholders are saying, we'll take as much as a 50%, what they call haircut, and the European leaders are saying, no, we need more like 70%.
But see, it sounds like that bowl keeps getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah,
they're just going to end up, when all is said and done, they're going to end up with a buzz cut.
It's getting to be a real time critical issue because they have a huge bond payment coming due in March. And if they don't get this negotiation out of the way, they're just going to default.
And where does the money come from? The IMF or Eurozone?
It's coming from a couple of different places.
Okay,
but
well,
those among
guess
them.
What? They're not going to wire that overnight. They need a little bit of time to get the money transferred.
Yeah, that's why they got to get this going. And then S&P comes out and they say, well, we're probably going to move Greece's credit rating down to what we call a selective default anyway. And, you know, at this point, thankfully, the market looks at the S&P headlines and they say, okay, let's move on. You know, nobody really cares. So that's
good to have credibility.
Yeah, that's kind of a good thing. Italy is actually now investigating Fitch's and S&P and things like that to see if some of the news that was coming out about their credit downgrade was some form of insider trading or market manipulation. So we'll see what happens with that. Big news on Tuesday, Federal Reserve started its two-day FOMC meeting, and we'll get some important announcements on Wednesday's market with a lot of clarity around them. Other than that, no economic releases in Tuesday's market. Lots and lots of earnings. Earnings season is starting to become really a pretty significant disappointment. So far, 20% of S&P 500 companies have announced earnings, 58% beating expectations, which sounds great, but that's way less than usual. So DuPont missed a revenue number. Verizon missed earnings expectations. Travelers missed expectations. Johnson & Johnson lowered guidance going forward. McDonald's had a really terrific number, easily topped expectations, but the stock sold off. I think profit taking there. And Texas Instruments had a better than expected number, but really earnings season has been pretty disappointing.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, a lot of the expectations we're going to have a good earnings year for 2012, but maybe a lot of the analysts' expectations were a little too high, or you just think the companies are trying to, you know, clean their books up and get ready? And
no, I think it's expectations are just too high. For example, Yahoo announced after the bell on Tuesday, they announced revenue of $1.17 billion. That's a lot of quarterly revenue. Expectation was $1.2 billion, so they'll probably suffer a little bit in Wednesday's market for that.
So here they are. They're going to do somewhere around $4.5 billion for the year.
Yeah,
and the investors aren't happy about that. And Yang's out of there, right?
Yeah, and Yang's out, which gave them a little bit of a boost at first when that announcement came out. But I think this number is going to hurt them. But to answer your question, I think expectations from the analyst community have just been too bullish. I think they have been so dour for so long that they're just looking for a reason to change their tone, and maybe they were a little bit early to that game.
Well, you mentioned the Fed, you know, the Federal Reserve, which is basically our monetary policy setting big power guys, are meeting. And, you know, they've made it pretty clear, which I think is very, very good for the investor and also for people, you know, making just basic financial decisions. I'm going to, you know, think about doing a mortgage, or I'm going to do different things, start a business. And the Fed has basically made it clear that they don't plan on raising interest rates on what they charge banks to loan them money, or the Fed rate, which is what they set for banks to loan to each other. They're not looking to raise those rates till probably into the late 2013, 2014.
Yeah, most of what I'm seeing is mid-2014, and we're going to have a very, very interesting announcement on Wednesday. You may remember back in the Volcker Fed and the Greenspan Fed, there was no clarity. It was basically, what I'm going to do, see you later. Well, now
they'll give them a little hint that, well, we're thinking about maybe...
Yeah, but you had to read all the nuance of the language and all that nonsense.
Well, and then Volcker would come out with a big 1% whack in the head,
right,
and like, well, wait a minute, where'd that come from?
Right.
You didn't even give us a hint.
Yeah, so the rules have really, really, really changed. The Bernanke Fed is very much different, and what they're going to do is actually have each district bank of the 12 district banks, they're going to predict their Fed funds rate each year out to 2015, as well as each Fed governor making a prediction of when interest rates are going to change. So clarity from the Fed is really, really, really increased. Most analysts think that mid-2014, maybe late 2014, before we get another rate increase.
And the thing I really like is they're giving us kind of a solid and a pretty tight range for what they want inflation to be.
Yep.
And they're saying between 1.5% and 2%.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and what that means, ladies and gentlemen, is if we start seeing inflation run hotter than 2%, what the Fed is telling us is that if it runs hotter than 2%, there's a good chance they're going to start to move toward reining in inflation, which is how they do it. Well, they raise interest rates.
Yeah. The other thing they've been clear about is, as we have been saying, we need growth, and particularly in the form of jobs, because they're concerned about inflation and the job market.
And we're still at 13 million, roughly, that are unemployed and looking for a job.
Right.
It's a big number.
So we'll see. But the expectation is that tomorrow there will be no announcement of interest rate increases. And most of the analyst community is expecting that to make the yield curve flatten, which means that rates on 30 years will come down faster than rates on 10 years.
Which makes the long-term cost of borrowing much cheaper, which makes it more business stimulative. It makes it more attractive for businesses to expand, especially in the United States, where this capital is less expensive,
yeah,
and to hire people and spend the cash or borrow. If they don't have the cash, they can borrow at a lower rate.
Yeah, because 30 years is a long, long lock-in period. So really, if you have to build significant plants or buy significant equipment, things like that, a longer-term loan at a very low rate is a pretty good place.
And where'd you say the 30-year was?
30s are a little over 3. 10s are at 2. They just did a 2-year auction, a quarter of a point.
Wow.
On a 2-year auction. 3 times bid to cover.
That's cheap.
Which means that every dollar they wanted to lend, people were willing to take $3.
Well, we'll come back to that right after the break. I want to talk a little bit about those different lengths of time for Treasury. Stick around, ladies and gentlemen.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first 2 books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read will find you clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. To request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. That number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Now, before the break, we're talking a little bit about the cost of the borrowing for our government. And I just want to touch on that for a couple minutes here and then get to a little bit more discussion about Japan, which I think is very interesting what's going on there. Scott, we talk about the rate that we're paying the government, which is us taxpayers. So we, the people, we're paying, you know, if we borrow money from investors or foreign governments or mutual funds, for 10 years, it costs us 2%, roughly.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
30 years, it's a little over 3%.
Yeah, 3 and change.
And you said the six-month?
Two-year.
Oh, the two-year was only a quarter point. Okay, well, here's a dumb question. You tell me if this makes sense. If that's the case, why wouldn't we try to sell as a government? Say, hey, look, here's what's for sale. I don't have a lot of 30-year for you. I want to sell some shorter-term stuff to drop down the cost of our borrowing.
Well, they've been selling tens. They've been selling a lot of tens, and they're using money to buy 30s, which tells me that they're really more focused on the long end of the curve than
so
the short end.
So they're trying to lock in and avoid an Italy type of arrangement.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're definitely looking to lower the longer end.
Because if you look at the cost of our $15 trillion debt, it's over, our average cost is around 3%, I think. So yeah. I think we're looking at it's around $500 billion a year in interest cost. Money that, of course, I know that everybody could have a lot better ideas of how to spend that money.
Yeah.
That's almost what it costs us for defense. So anyway, if we could pay that off, that would make our defense free.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Everybody would like that.
But just imagine, as difficult as things are here, imagine if our 10-year bonds were at 7% and not 2%. Or if our two-year papers were at 4% instead of a quarter of a point.
Or imagine if our total debt was double the amount of our GDP.
Yeah.
Right now, it's equal. It's 100%. We've got a $15 trillion economy, roughly, and we've got a $15 trillion debt.
Yeah.
So we've financed our country with $15 trillion, and basically, it's like, to put it in dollars, it's like somebody who makes $30,000 a year, and they've got $30,000 on a credit card.
Right. Which is what other countries are facing in some parts of the world.
But what's really amazing is what's going on in Japan. You know, they've had a long history of debt and deficits, and they now are up to 250, what is it? Where's the number? It's double. Their debt is double their total. Yeah, their debt is twice the size of their $5 million. Excuse me, I'm getting my orders of magnitude out of whack here, ladies and gentlemen. These numbers are so big. Japan has a $5 trillion economy. So they've got $10 trillion in debt.
Yeah, and going through a massive, massive shift in how that economy is run, they've always had a trade surplus.
They've been a net exporter.
Yeah.
They import stuff, but they have
net
made a bunch of stuff and sent it overseas.
Right. Well, that's changed. So 2011 looks like a trade deficit, and a lot of predictions for 2012 trade deficit as well. Part of that is because, you know, they lost power for all of March, and they had to import a bunch of stuff for that. But part of it is because they have a very, very strong yen right now. And part of it is just because the competition in the world for exports is really, really strong, particularly in that region. They've got to fight with China.
So, okay, let me get this straight. China, they keep their currency artificially low. Everybody knows that on the planet. Okay, there's no secret there. Which makes them very competitive when they export their stuff overseas from their overseas perspective.
Right.
Japan, doing the same thing, though, does not. They don't manipulate their currency. At least I don't think they do.
Right.
And they then have a stronger yen. And because of that, that makes their exports not as competitive.
Yes, although just to back up a second, I will say that you may recall in 1985 they had the Plaza Accord, where Japan got together with the U.S. and the European economies, and they basically made a pact to strengthen the yen because the trade imbalance was so dramatic.
Well, and you know, it's funny. It was this right now. It's 77 yen to a dollar.
Yeah.
Back in 1980, or 250 yen to a dollar.
Yeah, that's a big move. But just to give you an idea of how much their trade balance has shifted, for the first 11 months of 2011, Japan reported a trade deficit of 2.3 trillion yen. That's about $30 billion. In 2010, they had a surplus of about 6.6 trillion yen. That's a huge, huge shift in the course of a year. To go from a net exporter to a net importer is one thing, but to go to that degree is really pretty remarkable.
So, and even and what's really interesting, and it's funny how the world works. You know, we've got this huge glut of natural gas, and guess what? One of the big things that Japan's been importing,
yeah, natural gas. Right.
I mean, it's what is it now? The number's fallen so substantially, it's down to like $2 whatever. I mean, it's amazing. Well, it'll be, and the reason we're talking about this on the show today is that it's new, it's breaking news. But what's interesting is that it just goes to show you how we have to look at our investing from a global perspective. So we don't want to load up on any one country or sector, or, hey, I'm going to put all my money into technology stocks in Japan. Well, maybe not the best idea right now. So it really makes the argument for the sector diversification, the size of company diversification, and the round the world global diversification that we, of course, advocate all the time, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as quickly as Japan's economy has turned around, it really is as much indication as you need.
Well, there you go. There you go. One of the other things that I thought would be interesting for us to talk a little bit about is we started yesterday how to play the big five what-ifs for 2012. I was borrowing from a good Wall Street Journal article. And we talked yesterday about is what if Europe gets worse? And we talked about some, again, more of the diversification. The next one on the list was, what if the U.S. housing market finally, drum roll, finally improves?
Yeah, we're starting to see a lot of reports that maybe we're at a bottom. I mean, you know, a bottom is not a specific point in time. It's more of a shallowing out and then a climb back up.
Yeah, kind of the bottom of a U-shape.
Yeah, so we'll see. So we're seeing better numbers. I mean, to me, when we start to see mortgage rates go up, that will be a real sort of a market indicator, not a manipulated number indicator, that markets are starting to turn around, because that shows me there's a lot of buying demand.
Yeah, and I think also that the Fed will be a little bit more willing to raise interest rates once the housing really gets stabilized, because there's going to be a – even if – I know that they've set their threat or their level for around 2% inflation, but I think they may even have to let it run a little hotter just to get the housing back on its feet.
They might, and ultimately more jobs makes more house buyers.
Well, that's exactly right. We'll come back from this next break and talk more about it.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 13 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
And we are back, and let's get some more of this just stimulating financial stuff to talk about. Actually, I want to move to a topic that is very relevant to a lot of people that are getting closer to retirement or in retirement, and I want to talk a little bit about this whole concept of what's a safe withdrawal rate that you can take from your investments and not run out of money. Now, I have to preface my comments by saying this. I'm not a big fan of leaving all your money in the market and trying to orchestrate taking a percentage and then hoping for the best. I'm not a big fan of that. I think it's an unnecessary, what is that called? A bar from Al Gore. It's a risky tax scheme, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what he said? It's a risky investment scheme to try to do that. Now, there's some folks that, you know, they say that's the way you do it because in the long run it can work. But I think in our new economy, the new markets, I think that's a risky approach. So there's a lot of talk out. There's some reports. I asked Scott to stick around for a little bit this next segment. You got a report there you're holding. What is that, from Investment News?
From Investment News, yep. Brand new, fresh off the press.
And there's kind of a revisiting of this concept that's called the 4% rule. And again, there's all kinds of rules out there. The rule of 72, the rule of 100. How about the rule of don't lose all my money? I like that one. Okay. But the rule of 4%, or the 4% rule, is all about saying, look, based on how much money you've got when you retire, that is allegedly or supposed to be a safe withdrawal rate. That if you take that, odds are, chances are, and they've gotten rather sophisticated with some of this modeling that they do, where they say, hey, we've run 4,000 iterations. And
yeah, on the Monte Carlo simulation.
Yeah, Monte Carlo simulation. Right. I love that. And the bottom line is, there is this attempt by the investment community to say, look, you can keep your money invested, which, okay, great. You want it to grow and you've got to fight inflation, but you can keep it invested and you can draw off at a safe rate. But with the most recent economic and market events, especially if you look at 2000 through 2010, or that 9, 10 year period, 11 year period there, you had some wild swings. And what happens when you use that rule of 4%, or the 4% rule, is you can expose yourself to a pretty ugly side effect called the dollar cost averaging. And it's not a rule, it's something we want to avoid. So anything in particular that has come out, is it pretty much that the guy that, what's the guy that invented this 4% rule?
Yeah, William Bengen is the founder of the 4% rule. It came out in the 60s and 70s, and he really has made a career of just continuing to hone this and fine-tune it and things like that. And he basically says, you know, it still works. You can go maybe 4.5%, and he's basing his assumptions on portfolios that are, you know, 50-50, equity to bonds, somewhere in there. But he also says that the sequence of returns matters a lot.
That's everything right there.
Yeah, it matters a lot.
If you got you can have an average of, you know, I did analysis one time, and I used to talk about this quite a bit. I did analysis looking at investing for like a 15-year period, and if you get a couple of bad returns up front, you're out of money in 15 years.
Yeah.
Even if you earn a really high rate those subsequent years.
On an average, yeah.
I mean, if you lost 15, 20%, or let's say you retired January 1st of 2008, and then you proceeded to lose 37%, and you made the mistake, or you got bad advice to keep all your money in the market, you'd have lost 37%, which is over a third of your money, and you're in big trouble, because even if you then average a higher rate of return of 5, 10%,
yeah, it's not enough.
It's not going to be enough. It's just you dig a huge hole, and then you spend the rest of your retirement trying to dig back out.
Yeah, so he says sequence of returns is really, really important. He also says the biggest threat to the 4% rule, without a doubt in his mind, is hyperinflation.
That's interesting, because I find that a very interesting remark, because the number one reason that I think you keep some of your money in the market when you retire, because I think you need to diversify it and put it in other safer places, the number one reason I think you keep it in the market is for inflation. So that's interesting. I guess he's saying that you can...
He's saying if inflation moves faster than the market or interest rates. I mean, if we get inflation like we had in the Jimmy Carter era, and we have 30-year bonds that are paying 12%, you know, lock them in.
And even CDs were high and all that. But, you know, that's... And if he's saying hyperinflation, though, that period of time with Carter was a period of what I would call high inflation.
Yeah. And he specifically says hyperinflation.
Because we had a year, it was 1980, that we had 13.5% inflation.
Yeah.
Of course, CDs and all this was much higher. But if he's talking about hyperinflation, now you're talking about where just money's spiraling down in value, and your inflationary, a lot of strategies are just going to fail.
Yeah.
Your Monte Carlo simulation as many times as you want, and it's not going to work.
Yeah.
What's really interesting is this is simply a rule. But I think what it speaks to, this, you know, your safe rate, it speaks to the need for planning this out. You know, because you can get all kinds of studies out there. You know, people do studies on honeybees and how much honey they produce. You know, there's a study out. This was very interesting. Last year, there's a research paper that was done by the Journal of Financial Planning. And they said, of course, they're looking at how things have gotten pretty volatile. 2010, they said, you know, you only can really use about a 2% withdrawal rate.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Think of somebody that's got, you know, something as substantial, say $500,000. They only can take 10 grand out a year.
Yeah, that's
not going to work. Yeah. Now, then turn right around within a couple of weeks, the Retirement Management Journal. It's like the war of the journals. Say that fast. Okay. They come out and they say, well, you know, it for $500,000, you can get 7% return and you have $35,000 a year.
Yeah.
So it's all over the board. Yeah. And it's really confusing for people. And so I think this really makes the point for the planning. I had a person come in, just back in before the end of the year, back in end of 2011, and she had been told that she needed this huge number to retire, just a big number. And so we did some planning, and we did some analysis, and we did some calculating, and looked at some different products and investments. And the long story short is that she only needed half of what she was told by some of these studies. She didn't need to have this.
Yeah, these studies have never met her.
Isn't that
right?
Funny? So very good. So very good, Scott.
Thank you.
I'm going to add that to my little repertoire.
He does also say, and I'm sure you had this discussion with that client, that when you have your target in mind, you have to stay disciplined to it.
That's true. I agree with that. But you know what? I think you can also, not only do you need to stay disciplined to your target, but you've got to discipline your money. And you can't have it. It's like putting your, you know, we have a leash law in our county here, and you can't just let your dog run all over because it's going to end up hurting itself or hurting somebody else.
Yeah.
So you got to keep your portfolio on a leash, and some of it needs to be protected, diversified, and then you can have some money that's more aggressive. And that's what people need to do. All right. We're going to take another short break and we'll be right back.
Do you ever think about the effects inflation will have on your retirement savings? Can you remember when gas was just $1 per gallon? Or when you could buy a house for less than what most cars sell for these days? Is it possible to keep pace with inflation and protect a portion of your portfolio from stock market volatility? A registered investment advisor can show you your options. Certified financial planner David Holland and his team of fee-based investment advisors are ready to help. Schedule your free consultation today by calling 888-747-PLAN. That number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit us at www.davidholland.com.
9 cents. That's it. 9 cents is all it takes to feed a person if you donate wisely. Have you ever been approached on the street or the side of the road by somebody asking for a couple of bucks and thought, where's my money going? Well, when you choose to donate to Halifax Urban Ministries, that same $2 can buy 20 meals and will be used to win the fight against homelessness. I am a proud supporter and I want to encourage you to put your money towards something real. Visit HalifaxUrbanMinistries.org to find out how you can help or call 386-252-0156. 386-252-0156.
With so many financial products and services available today, do you ever wonder what the best income strategy is for your situation? Call Holland Financial to receive a free educational DVD on retirement income strategies. Certified financial planner David Holland discusses some of the income planning strategies used by retirees and baby boomers. The DVD is available free of charge, hassle, or pressure by simply calling 888-747-PLAN. Again, that's 888-747-7526.
This is your 2-minute warning.
Yeah, it is a 2-minute warning. And thank God, you know what? That whistle is so appropriate. I feel like I have to play the media's fact checker, ladies and gentlemen. I'm getting a little tired of it. I wanted to get to a conversation today about Social Security, and we'll get to that. But you know what? This continual playing games with the numbers in politics, and I just, a couple of these things have to be addressed because it affects your money. And so I'm doing my research and just kind of keeping track of what's going on in the markets and looking at the impact. In fact, I just met with a client who said, tell me what the potential impact on my investments, my IRAs, my annuities, my different holdings, how will I be affected by what's going on with the election? If this guy wins, if that guy wins, what does that do? And what does all that makeup happen with me? So we can't ignore what's going to happen with taxes. Now, what I can't ignore, there's a nice segue, what I can't ignore is there was here we go. We've got a report out from Bloomberg, and it says that, okay, where is it? This is really interesting. Oh, here's what I want to get to first. The ABC News, George Stephanopoulos, he's got somebody's interviewing, and they talk about what's going on. You know, Romney's tax bracket of 14% is all the rage. And they say, oh, well, you know, that's the same rate that people pay that are in that make $70,000. And I heard that and I was like, you know what? That doesn't sound right. So I did some fact checking. I ran the numbers and it's not correct. Somebody who has $70,000 in income has in taxable income has a $6,800 tax bill, which is less than 10%. It's not 15%. So to get to 15%, you've got to make a lot more money than that. And it's like $125,000. So let's listen to these guys bang their heads and say all this crazy stuff on television, but just check it and think about it. It's not what it is. And the simple solution, as I've said before, let's just all pay the same rate. Pick the rate and we'll all pay it, 10%, whatever it is, and stop playing games with tax deductions and exemption for this, exemption for that, and it would be so much easier. And you know what? It would turn the economy around. Thanks for being with me.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 ton, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.